Ladies and gentlemen, the James Whale Radio Show. Ah, right, welcome to the program. Not feeling too happy today, not feeling like doing it, because my dog Rocky died this morning, but you know, he was a good age, and one has to carry on, does one not?
Very sorry to hear that.
No, well, you know, unfortunately for those people who have dogs in their lives, and I've always had dogs in my life, and that's one of the tragedies, that, you know, they don't live as long as we do. And sadly, Rocky was 13 years old, nearly, a good age for a dog, and very sad. I went to work this morning to do my radio show on a breakfast radio show, and my wife rang me and said he's just had a stroke, and by the time I got home, he was dead, which is... Anyway, so I'm doing the program, and then I should probably go and scream outside. I can never understand, you know, people who have a dog in their lives, and then when the dog gets old and when the dog needs you, and Rocky had been, you know, a bit of a grumpy old man for the last year or so, and he needed a lot of cuddles and looking after and so on and so forth, and people just chuck old animals out like discarded and disused toys.
That's disgusting.
I could cheerfully hang the lot of them. In fact, I think it should be made really difficult for people to get an animal. As difficult as it is for somebody to adopt a child, it should be that difficult, in my mind, to get an animal. And whilst I'm in this frame of mind, I better be careful, I suppose, what I say. But I was just watching another tragic... another boat full of a lot of women and children has just sunk in the Mediterranean as I speak. In fact, one bloke has been saved from the boat, and there's rather harrowing scenes of him being winched to safety by the, I think, by the Turkish Coast Guard. And, you know, how long has this been going on? Where families have been fleeing the area of Syria and various other war-torn areas. Are we doing flip all about it? Absolutely flip all about it. And we're sitting there, you know, moaning about whether we maintain our membership of the European Union, and moaning about how there are so many poor people in this country and how we're so full. I better be careful, because I will, you'll edit it out anyway. I will go over the top. But, you know, why don't they get off their fat flipping backsides in Parliament and actually realise that the world is beginning to fall apart and do something about it? You know, we're quite happy to go over and bomb countries. We're quite happy to help get rid of dictators. And I'm not sticking up for dictators, far from it. But if we're going to get rid of dictators, can we not have a plan to help maintain the stability of the country before we do it? And we've got rid of all the dictators in the Middle East, and now the whole place is in chaos. Just imagine what it must be like. Well, we can't, can we? Because we live a charmed life, basically, in this country. And all right, look at the worst thing. You know, where would you rather sleep on the streets? In London or Aleppo? And mind you, people in Aleppo and other parts of Syria don't have much choice. So I'm angry about it. And I'm pretty angry today as well that, you know, you've got this huge argument between the government and doctors as if life wasn't difficult enough. The doctors are getting, and I have, we all have sympathy with doctors. They do a very, very difficult job. But, you know, that they and the government are paying the doctors, you and I in that case, you and I out of our taxes are paying the doctors for their work in the national health. And there's not a lot of money around. They have to understand that, like everybody else. And if they don't like working, as a lot of them say, the hours, then I suggest what they do is they bring it to a head and they quit. And then if you don't like the job, rather than going on strike, just go. And then perhaps that will concentrate everybody's mind. I told you I'm in a bit of a radical mood now at the moment.
What can we do to cheer you up?
What can we do to help you? I don't know. I really don't know. I really don't know. I tell you what. Here, let's talk about this. I put this out on. Or should we talk curry first? Or should we talk about Donald Trump? Or should we talk about curry?
Well, curries do cheer you up. Yes, we can talk about curries.
Yeah. Well, let's do that before we do anything else. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the James Whale Radio Show. Don't forget to check out the website, by the way. Lots on there. In the shop, you can buy T-shirts, whale T-shirts, baseball caps, a fabulous book by somebody called James Whale called Almost a Celebrity. I should have changed that. I should have called it Definitely a Celebrity, and then they'd have invited me to go to Australia, wouldn't they?
How does that work?
Well, I don't know. I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. Apparently, they pay very well and put you in a top hotel.
Would you do it, though?
No, absolutely not. having said that, you know, if somebody comes and offers you a lot of money for doing it, I can be bought the same as everybody else.
Well, what sort of figure would you have in mind? If I don't know. I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. That involves travelling abroad. What about Big Brother? How much would you... We talked about Big Brother last week. Would you go in for the 70,000 or would you go in for higher?
Somebody would have to offer me money first and I'd have to think about it. But rest assured, if I ever appear on any of those programmes, they will have paid a lot of money.
Right. So it's a lot of money.
Yeah. But what's a lot of money to me? You know, offer me 10 grand, I might be tempted at the moment. Well, actually, offer me a few hundred quid at the moment, I might be tempted. That's a good question. Let's put it out there. How much money would you want to go and live in a jungle or a house or on a farm with no sugar or go down a ski ride? How much would you want to do that? Celebrity or not, how much would you want? Email me, jameswhale@gmail.com, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com.
I think I'd do it for 2 Mars bars.
Yeah. Well, I might do it for a Snickers, but there we are. I'm quite cheap. Okay. So, listen, have we done a commercial?
You've just done a commercial.
Oh, I have done. Yeah, I have just done a commercial. Right. Let's talk to Harry Gotra, who is an Indian restaurant entrepreneur. So let's get Harry on the phone and talk to Harry about curry, because that does cheer me. Do you like a good curry?
I like a curry, and I would imagine a good one would be better than a bad one.
Well, if we're going out for a meal in an Indian restaurant, what would you choose?
A lamb tikka Rogan Josh.
A lamb tikka Rogan Josh. Well, I would have probably at the moment, and I go through phases, but I would like a chicken tikka Jalfrezi. Mm. With a vegetable methi on the side.
I also like that tandoori lamb chops as well. They're nice.
They're slightly common.
I can't get them in our Indian.
Slightly common. You can't. You live in Wales. You can't get an Indian meal in Wales, can you?
Now that you mention it, we haven't been for an Indian restaurant for a long time because they sort of come and go around here.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, they turn up, they start cooking some good food, and then the food goes downhill a bit, and then they disappear, and then another one turns up. It's a shame, really.
Well, that's like restaurants, you know. It's to be fair to restaurateurs, it sometimes if you lose your chef and you get another chef, you can tell by the standard of food.
Yeah, it's very hard to get a good curry in Wales.
Let's talk to Harry anyway, because I think she'll be great fun.
Sitting in my room and I'm on my own. It's cold outside and I'm feeling alone. So I turn that dial and my radio's on. I hear James Whale and my troubles are gone. I hear James Whale on the radio. I hear James Whale and his podcast show. I hear James Whale on the radio. Podcast Joe James Whale on the radio.
Now, quite often I wake up and there's a funny aroma in my bedroom, and that's usually because I've been eating curry the night before. And I'd be quite honest with everybody, I'm self-confessed curry holic, and have been for many, many years. Harry, nice to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on today.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely to speak to you.
And I watch with interest your vlogs you do on your website and your tweets. And this is going to be difficult for me because I just I love curry.
Have you had lunch yet?
No, I haven't had lunch yet, which is probably even worse. Let's start there. If I was going to have lunch today, you're in your restaurant at the moment, aren't you?
I am, yes.
Yeah, what's on the menu today?
Oh, we've got lots of beautiful things. So our set lunch, we've got a really lovely chicken dish, which is finished off with some fresh spinach. We've got some lovely salads and starters as well, which it's got the tamarind, the very special tamarind marinade on, which is just divine, really fresh. We've got some of the a la carte dishes, so the lamb shank, which is just beautiful. The sauce is really, really rich. So if that's not making you hungry...
Yeah, that is making me hungry, actually. So stop there. One of the things, perhaps people don't know, but for around about 10 years, I used to be one of the judges for the British Curry Awards. And I think, if my memory serves me well, you won one, if not more than one, award.
Tamarind have won a few over their lifetime, which is always, a pleasure, because we are Indian food. That's what we're all about, and that's what we want to tell the world. So yeah.
Now, is Indian food? Now let's clear this up, because most Indian restaurants are run by Bangladeshis, aren't they?
I guess a lot of the smaller family-run restaurants tend to be, yeah. So there's a real sort of mix in the dishes that are available on those menus, and a lot of them tend to be a mixture of some regional dishes and just some dishes that are expected to be on the Indian menu. Everybody expects to see a madras or a korma or a tikka masala across the board, and I think a lot of that is just expectation of from what's happened in years gone by. Whereas I think a lot of the new restaurants, or certainly in the London area, a lot of them are much more regional and tend to focus on regional cuisine rather than just a generic lot of dishes, if you like.
So why did the Bangladeshi community, do you think, become so so keen on running restaurants?
I think it was, back in the day when people were coming over to the UK to improve their life, if you like. They were entrepreneurs in their own right, and as in years gone by, as in now, there's always been a bit of a love for Indian food, and there's always been a bit of a thirst for trying exotic dishes. So they were very entrepreneurial and started to cook these lovely, fragrant, aromatic dishes that were new to a lot of people. So it just felt like the right, or not necessarily the easy thing to do, because it's flipping hard work, but it felt like something that they could do, so why not?
Well, one of my sons is a chef, so I can vouch for the fact that it is, as you say, flipping hard work. Is the food we eat in restaurants? Tamarind is different. Tamarind is one of the new restaurants. I haven't been to Tamarind. I have to be quite honest. You'll have to come and visit us
very soon, then, won't you?
I shall have to. But I remember my mum and dad. I was brought up in a pub in London, and they used to go to a restaurant. I'm trying to think of the name of it. It was in a little alleyway just off Regent Street, and it was probably the only Indian restaurant in London at the time. Was it called the Gaylord or not?
I was going to say something, it sounds about right. But, back in the day, there was hardly any. I can remember, I grew up in the 80s, but I can remember as a child my mum cooking in the kitchen and neighbours knocking on the door and telling her off, basically saying, "You're making the whole street smell. Can you stop what you're doing?" So we've come an awful long way from then.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I go past an Indian restaurant and they're cooking, quite often I have to go in. And I don't care whether it's, I think it was the Kashmiri Social Club in Bradford. where I had one of the best ever curry minced dishes with a chapati that I think I've ever had, or whether it was one of the very upmarket restaurants. I was trying to think of, there's a Bombay Bicycle Club, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, absolutely. It's very well known, yeah. I mean, the thing is, now in London, you've got such an amazing Indian food scene. You know, like I said, there's a lot of regional stuff and a lot of regional restaurants popping up, which are specialising in specific areas. So you've got Hoppers, which is a new South Indian restaurant that's just sort of launched recently. And it's just, I think it's great to see the variety and the different styles of cooking that come from India sort of being brought over now, as opposed to that sort of generic curry that we're also used to.
One of the big political issues amongst people in your business, Harry, is that they're not allowed to bring chefs, or it's difficult to bring chefs in from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, wherever. And that's causing quite a lot of controversy. But my point is, why can't we cook curry?
That's a very interesting question. So I started my career by going into people's homes and teaching them about Indian food and cooking Indian food. And I only really because I've always loved cooking. I've got a real, you know, it's something that I just love doing. And that's born from just being immersed in that sort of environment as I grew up. You know, I learned to cook. I'm not trained as such. I'm a home cook. I learned to cook by following my mum around the kitchen. And that sort of ingrained in me a real love for Indian food, or food as we call it. But I think because I've grown up in that environment, and I think a lot of the Indian chefs, obviously, that's the environment that they've grown up in. They sort of, there's an intrinsic understanding of how to spice dishes and you know, what's going to work. And there are certain things that I would do or wouldn't do. And I think it's probably, I think there's an element of that. But I'm not going to sit here and say that nobody can learn how to cook Indian food, because I believe, you know, I don't think it's true. I think, you know, you can learn how to cook Indian food. I just think that it's been shrouded in a little bit of mystery, that whole sort of Eastern spice thing. And we've tried to make it really complicated. A lot of the cookery books make it very, very complicated. And people are just scared of trying to use spices because they just think it's going to ruin their dishes and so on. You know, there's a lot of Western chefs out there who can cook great Indian food. But I think there's lots of little issues that sort of surround Indian food and the use of spices and that kind of thing that probably makes it quite difficult for people to sort of break into that world.
Well, my wife is a vegetarian, and so Indian food is her favourite food. And she makes a mean tikka dal, which I think is probably that, or a vegetable dansak is probably her favourite dish. And it is difficult because if you don't know the right amount of, if you buy a curry paste, it doesn't taste anything like at all. You have to prepare your own spices, really, and that's the difficult thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, it certainly is. I mean, I am a firm believer in buying your spices whole and grinding them as and when you need them, because the flavours and the aromatics and the aromas that you get from fresh spices is so much more superior to anything pre-ground that you can get. I've never used a paste out of the jar, and I just don't see why you would do it, because you don't have to go over the top in terms of spice, and you can do something very, very simple and get something that just tastes so much more fragrant and aromatic and fresh from just grinding your own spices. It doesn't take much, a little bit of cumin and a little bit of garam masala. You know, you could have a wonderful, wonderful dish there. I think what I've always tried to do is just to break down dishes and teach people that you can do this at home. And I think, you know, that whole mystery about Indian food needs to come down a little bit so that people are empowered. I've just launched my own sort of range of curry kits. And the one thing I say to people is, this is not about convenience food. These kits are just there for people who want to cook Indian food but just are a bit scared. So it gives you all the spices in little packets and tells you exactly what you need to do. So you need to grind this one and you need to add this and then you need to put a little bit of tamarind in and so on. And it's all about, for me, what's really important is getting people in the kitchen to cook and try new dishes and try new flavours. But to get that freshness and to get that, you know, the real authentic taste that you're looking for, you've got to use fresh ingredients and fresh spices.
Well, I'll do a deal with you. I'll put an advert for your new range of curry packs on our website and on this program if you send me some.
Yep, I will do. I can do that. I'll send you a selection for you anyway, and then you can have some of giveaways or prizes if you want as well.
All right. Well, I'll cook one and do a taste test on the program in the next couple of weeks.
That sounds great.
Now, here I've got a problem as well that you might be able to help me with, Harry. I'm addicted to methy.
I love methy. So, to me, methy is the iconic Indian aromatic. So methy's fenugreek, yeah?
Yep. Yeah.
And there's different... So when you buy methy or fenugreek, quite often in the shops here, in the supermarkets and so on, you'll get methy as a powder, as a brown powder or as the whole spice. So methy is, what it does is it adds a slight bitterness to your dish. But if you buy the ground spice or the whole spice, it's very, very powerful. It's really quite a potent spice, so you only need to use it very, very sparingly. But kasuri methi, which is the dried herb of that same plant, so it's a green powder, it's a green leaf that's been ground into a powder. If you use that, it's much lighter in the bitterness that it adds. So it adds a real curry aromatic and can be a little bit more heavy-handed with.
And apparently it's very good for you. It's very good for cleansing the body.
Absolutely. So all spices have some element of holistic medicinal value. But methi is very, very good for you. It is a cleansing spice.
And it's also, I started this, it's also the one that you can smell most when you wake up in the morning.
It seems to seep. So you started, you know, I was going to, I was about to say when you started that, you know where that comes from. It is, so when you cook a curry at home or you cook any Indian food, when you come down in the morning and you can still smell that and it's in your, you know, and you can smell it in the atmosphere, it's methi. That's what it is that leaves that aromatic in your home. For me, I love it because it's just it just smells gorgeous, I think. But for a lot of people, that's the bit that they don't want to have the remnants of in their kitchen the next day.
No, listen, I tell Mrs. W, don't bother about perfume. If we've been eating curry the night before, you'll smell fine to me.
I like your style.
In fact, I want everybody to go out for Valentine's Day and eat some methi and see whether it works for you.
I think that's a great idea. We could do some blind dates on that, couldn't we?
Now, listen, let's talk about your website a bit. You've got on your website, you've got vlogs and you're telling people how to make food, which is good that they can follow along with, can't they?
That's right. So so the website really started off as an addition to the classes that I started to do. And what happened with the classes is I was inundated by requests and there was a certain part of me that thought, you know, I don't really know how to take my business any further because there's only one of me. I don't know how I get around all these different places and or see all these different people. So we set up the website in conjunction with a digital marketing agency that I've been working very closely with called Jellyfish. And when I spoke to them, they said, well, the thing is that people want you in their kitchen and they want you to help them to cook some of these Indian dishes that they know and love. But obviously, not everybody's got access to you. So how do we make it possible for people to have access to you, for you to teach class the way that you would teach a class on a one-on-one basis? So from that, we set up the website. And the website is very much centered around teaching people how to cook, so giving them the opportunity to cook great, authentic Indian food from scratch. It's all about getting people in the kitchen. So a lot of the recipes are videos that sit alongside a lot of the recipes. I've got a whole channel on YouTube where I've got long versions of the videos for people who want to just sit and watch and understand a little bit more about how you put the dish together. Then I've also got some short videos, which are for people who, you know, want to take their iPad into the kitchen and cook along with me. I do a whole host of sort of live YouTube events where I get people to log in and we can cook together. I'm on Periscope quite frequently, just in my kitchen cooking certain dishes. So for me, it's all about engaging with all of those Indian food lovers that are out there that have a passion for Indian food, but are a little bit reluctant to do it themselves. And I just want to give them a little helping hand to be able to create some of those gorgeous flavours that I love, and just help them do it. And from the website and from the YouTube channel and so on, you know, I've got all of my different social media activities that are going on. So, as you said, I'm on Twitter very, very regularly, either talking about specific dishes or talking about events that, you know, you could spice up a little bit. So we've got some Valentine's recipes that I'll be talking about, obviously, around Valentine's Day. And just little things that I've put a little Indian twist on. So we've got some strawberries dipped in chili chocolate just to heighten all of that lovely stuff that you need around Valentine's Day and so on. But the whole website is geared around helping people to cook great authentic food in their own homes.
Well, I've got an idea for a TV show. I think getting you to teach well-known British chefs how to cook curry would go down very well. I'm gonna keep that in my mind for something to do in the future. Now, just before we finish this, I present a breakfast program on a radio station every day, as well as this. Yep. And I've just been going through your Indian breakfasts, which is on your website. And you know, I'm getting fed up with porridge, to be quite honest. So I reckon Indian scrambled eggs, which looks very good. Breads, a paratha stuffed with potatoes.
With
that looks good too.
Yep.
Tell me how you make, very quickly, tell me how you make Indian scrambled eggs. What do I put in the eggs?
So Indian scrambled eggs are, it's one of those dishes that, this is how my mum made scrambled eggs. It's not like a dish that, it's just how she, or she didn't do scrambled eggs. This is how she made scrambled eggs. So it's eggs just whisked up, frying pan, a little bit of oil or butter in there. And you can essentially put in whatever you like. But I quite like them with mushrooms, some chopped tomatoes, spring onion. So you just fry those off. No ginger or garlic, nothing too heavy because it's breakfast. So you just saute those off, just soften them. And then we go in with some garam masala. Always have a chopped green chili in there. And then you put your eggs in and you just fold it through and make up scrambled eggs with loads of flavour and loads of spice in there. And it's that on a little bit of toast in the morning will set you up for the day.
God, I'm going to have to go and make that for lunch. Or paratha, which is flat bread that's it's like a chapati that's fried, isn't it? That's stuffed with potatoes.
Yes. So, I mean, paratha are very much an Indian breakfast dish. So it's cooked in India all the time. One of my favourites is aloo paratha, which is the ones with the spiced potatoes. And my children love them. So for kids, aloo paratha are just amazing. But it's not just potatoes. You can also stuff them with spiced radish. So mooli is a very famous one. You know, the long white radishes.
Yep. Yep.
Also, cauliflower. Spiced cauliflower is a really, really lovely stuffing for this paratha dish. But yeah, so you just spice up your potatoes. Boil up potatoes. My mum would quite often boil them up the night before so they're ready for the morning. So they're nice and cold. She'd peel them, grate them, and then you put in there garam masala, salt, some chili, some fresh coriander, a little bit of fenugreek goes in. And, you know, some people would put in garlic and things and onion as well. But I tend to leave it with just a little bit of ginger just to freshen it. And you just mix all of that up and you make the dough, which is with atta or a whole wheat flour. And then you just take a little ball of the stuffing and pop it into the middle and you roll it out carefully so that the inside doesn't come out. And then it's just fried on a flat griddle pan. So it's not deep fried or anything. It's on a flat chapati pan. So you can use a frying pan for it and you just toast one side, you turn it over, you put a little bit of butter on the top or some ghee if you want to, and then you turn it over and it gets all hot and steamy in the kitchen. but they are lovely. And something like that with just some yogurt and a little bit of pickle in the morning wakes your mouth up, provides your soul with a bit of happiness, I think. And then it just sets you up for the day. But if you want me to come and make you some à la plante, I would be happy to come and make you some of those because they are amazing.
Well, I might hold you to that, or I might pop in and see you in Tamarind very soon. In the meantime, Harry, thank you very much indeed. Remind everybody where your website is.
Yes, so the website is www.harrygotra.co.uk. So yeah, if you and obviously the YouTube channel there as well. So if you like cooking along with somebody showing you how to do it, there all of those videos are up there. So it's makes it nice and easy for you to join.
Thank you very much indeed. That was great. We'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Lovely. Thanks ever so much for your time. And make sure you cook up some of those spices and get enthused about using spices and cooking some lovely dishes.
Take care.
All right, then.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
So thank you, Harry, very much indeed. She was nice. Do you think, I mean, if we get some free food off her, is that terrible doing and then put an ad on the website? Is that a terrible thing to do?
Not if you get free food, no, especially a curry.
All right. Okay. Well, can you make up a little commercial and put it on the website?
Well, I could do something. Yeah, we'll take some photos and put some text. Yeah.
And links to her. Listen, I've just been looking at her website.
Mm-hmm.
She's got lots of videos of her doing cookery.
I'll check that out. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, have a little look at that and see what you think. Okay, now, I was going to talk about Donald Trump, wasn't I?
You were, yes.
Because he just won a primary.
School?
Probably. No, was it in New Hampshire? He just won the New Hampshire primary as the preferred candidate for the Republican Party. Now, I mean, I don't know Donald Trump. I've been up his tower some years ago. And you, metaphorically speaking, and you've seen when he goes on. So who are the two? Are they his daughters? The two stick thin women who stand either side of him and look gormless.
I've seen his apprentice program with his son sat next to him. But I've not seen his
really?
Daughters. Yeah.
I tell you what, I'm worried. I don't give a fig for Donald Trump one way or the other. You know, he's a comedian. And he can't believe half the rubbish that comes out of his mouth. I think he's laughing inwardly, thinking, I can't believe these people are so gullible. But I tell you, the thing that worries me is that people actually voted for him.
Well, why not? What else have you got to vote for?
Don't be ridiculous. If you heard the garbage that comes out of his mouth, and people in America, this really worries me. Because, you know, imagine Donald Trump became the next president of the United States of America. Do you know what I'd be doing?
I'm a celebrity, get me out of here?
No, I'd be trying to get to Mars.
So Australia isn't far enough away.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, you know, the man's nuts, isn't he? But what worries me even more than that so many Americans agree with him. Dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. So I put it out on Facebook, and I asked the question simply, what question did I ask?
You asked, Donald Trump, are you frightened?
And this is great. Dave Hill says, no, we live in a democracy, and so do the people of the USA. I would be more worried if Trump was somehow excluded, as it would mean an end to democracy. Do you know, Dave, what is so good? Let's explore that. What the flipping heck is so good about democracy? Was it Churchill who said, it's the best of a bad situation? Democracy is the only thing we've got at the moment. It's not that good, but it's the only thing we've got. Something along those lines.
Yeah, it's not really a democracy when only 40% of the population vote, is it really?
No. So, Dave, where do you get off on this flipping democracy bit? Because it's not democratic. We're not, you know, governed in this country by a government that are democratically elected, are we? We're governed in this country by a minority government, and always have been, because so many people are so damned lazy, they won't get off their fat flipping backside and go out and vote. JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com. Get in touch. If you don't like it, tell me. Bruce Orman says, voting for World War III, Turkey's Christmas comes to mind. Jane Brown, very a Muppet leading Muppets. Oh, thank goodness for this. Dave, I was beginning to think a lot of people felt like you. So far, no good. Julie Morell says, we should be worried. Man's a rounded door handle. I haven't heard that before. That's rather good. Man's a rounded door handle, yeah. Right. Oh, for goodness sake. Oh, dear. Hang on a minute. My computer's jumping all over the place. What are you doing, you stupid thing? Right. Maria says, if Trump doesn't become president of the USA, the USA will end up the same as the UK, dumping ground for undesirables and criminals. Well, there you are, Maria. Maybe you and Dave Hill should get together if you think that. You know, I love this. People think, well, you know, Donald Trump and others think, yeah, well, we'll just make our country great. Yeah, sure, the expense of every other human being on the planet. Is that what you want, Maria? We are a dumping ground for undesirables and criminals. How do you work that out? The trouble is, you read the Daily Mail and you listen to a lot of, I suppose, quite a lot of broadcasts around the world, and you might get that idea. I don't know. Michael Johnson says, Donald rhymes with, is he worse than Ronald Reagan? Yeah, I think probably he is a lot worse. Kieran Fox says, the question is simple. As traditionally, America has taken world stage and tried to be center forward. Are you happy with Trump doing your media bidding on all things life? No idea what that means, Kieran. Ivor Williams, personally, I hope he does get in. The US needs a serious reboot after the damage Obama has caused over the past 7 years. I worry about people who think like this. Bob Thegan says, I'm made up. Donald Trump will be the best thing to happen to the USA and the West in a long, long time. A smart, hard-edged nationalist with his own people's best interests at heart, looking to reverse everything the international bankers and the liberals have done to Europeans and our civilization. Bob, do you really think the Americans are a good benchmark for civilization? Have you been to America? Anyway, so there we are. Colin Edwards says, he's a joke. Simon Serkin says, terrible. And Andy Swan says, Canada will be when a mass of Americans move there. Oh, dear. Do you know, I'm not going to do any more, but I'm concerned that there are some of you who actually think it's a brilliant thing. I really am. But still, there we are. We'll have to wait and see, won't we? Of course, you're quite happy that he could push the button, that he actually believes some of the things that he says, that you think he could actually be a diplomat and diplomatically discuss things. Or, I don't know, some people are nuts. I mean, do you see this? These people who are holding out or have been holding out in the it's out in the Arizona desert somewhere. They've been holding out because they don't like the way the American government are talking to them. And just, I don't know, the mass shootings in America, just this, everything. I don't know why I'm becoming a bit anti-American, because John Wayne was my hero. But then that was all fictitious, Robbo, wasn't it?
Sadly, yes.
Yeah. Ah, dear, what else is going on today? What else is going on in the world?
Well, there's obviously lots going on in the world, but nothing's jumping out at me. Should we play our Welsh jingle?
Ah, right. That I was worried about that. You did tell me you've got this. What is this?
Well, someone obviously who listened to the show last week, and some comments were made about the Welsh, I think, somewhere. They thought it was about time we had some bilingualism on the show. So they sent in a Welsh jingle for the show.
And who are the people who recorded this?
It's a person called Dylan.
Shall we listen to the jingle, and then, because I speak fluent Welsh, shall I tell you what it said?
Okay, I'll play it now.
Okay. Catarco chitaro, diddorol arfa marw, gwylltio'r gwestan gandryll, iagor mor fil mawr. Slygad canwyll, ei agwedd anghredadwy, ei raglen paid a'i fethu. Yeah!
Corville Mawr.
So basically it says, red rag to a bull, more interesting than you believe, incense all his guests, James Whale, the great hold your hand to a lit candle, this program unbelievable, miss him at your peril, James Whale, the great. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, I suppose because it's been translated, but it's like using that Google Translate.
That... No, because I translated that just then because I'm fluent. Achavi in Welsh.
That's like you've done the literal translation there. It's just like word for word. It doesn't work, does it, when you do that?
Doesn't it?
No.
Let's just compare that to this. Anyway, that was Freeway Mad and their jingle. Giochemvauer. Talking about Freeway Mad, here's a track from them. I love this one. It's called Hey Girl. We'll be right back. anyway, Matt, hey, girl, and you're listening to James Whale Radio Show on jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Check out the website as well. Make sure you see all our commercials. And, of course, if you want to help, we're talking, funnily enough, Freeway Mad, we're talking actually about doing a pilot of a television show. People keep saying, why don't you bring back your TV show? I didn't really want to do until we saw Chris Evans.
Yes.
And then we thought we could probably do it, well, you know, not better, but my show was different. And so we might well do it differently, as I was talking before. In fact, we were talking before about it, weren't we?
We were, yes.
And so we're looking at a date in April to record a pilot show, which would go out on, where would it go out?
Yeah, it would go out soon after, I would imagine.
But there are a few things we need. We need some people, not many, but just a few of you, in the audience, if you would like to be in the audience. Maybe if you're completely barking mad, you can be on the show.
That has been known, yes.
Yeah. To get in touch with us, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. But also, we need to finance it. And so if anybody is interested, we were thinking of doing what's that financing thing?
Crowdfunding.
Yeah, but we don't have time because we're going to go ahead and do it. We've got some sponsorship in place, but we could do with some more. And if you'd like to help, then just go to the website and click on the donate button. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah. But do get in touch if you've got any thoughts on that. JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com. Now, tech talk.
Can I talk about North Koreans?
Oh, hang on. We just talked about Trump. Why don't we talk about that? Yes, that brings the whole thing into, you know, who's the boss of North Korea? Little short fat chap with the funny hair. What? You get shot for that, couldn't you, in North Korea?
Yes, you will get shot for that. Yes.
Yeah, a little short fat chap. Because I'd love to see him and Donald Trump in a bath of jelly. And doing some of that jelly wrestling that used to be very popular in the 90s.
I'll see if we can get him on the new TV show.
Yeah. What about Donald Trump and what's his face from North Korea? The little fat one with the funny hair. Everybody's starving in North Korea except him.
Yeah.
Because he ate all the pies. Anyway, yeah, tech talk. Go on.
North Korean, they're a bit cut off, aren't they, from the rest of the world?
Yeah.
So people are asking for donations of old USB memory sticks.
Right.
And what they're doing is they're smuggling them into North Korea, filled with westernised movies, news footage, etc. And thus educating the people in North Korea what the rest of the world is like.
The only thing I would say about that is that if they get caught with those, then they will probably be disappeared, so they must be careful.
So what they're doing, about 10,000 of them got sent with balloons a few months ago.
Oh, yes.
So they sort of fly over the border, and they land, obviously, and they're asking for more donations of USB memory sticks. I'll try and find the link if anyone's interested in sending a memory stick.
Yeah,
so I thought
but no food, otherwise a little short fat one will nick it. And make sure he doesn't get a copy of this program as well.
Yeah, no, he, we're off his radar.
At least are we? Good, thank goodness for that.
At least I hope we are.
But he is a plonker, isn't he?
Notice I haven't said anything bad about him.
You did. You said you thought he was the silliest looking man you'd ever seen. And don't edit that out either. Right, questions for the whale, because I must go and see how Mrs. W is doing.
Okay, let's get rid of these. Let's get these out of the way.
No, let's get these done, right? Very important part of the programme, just to prove I have an answer for everything.
Okay, Jane Freeman. Why won't my teen tidy his room?
Well, because it's in the DNA. If you're a teenager, you don't do tidy. And can I also say, Jane, if your teenager does tidy his or her room, you'd be very worried. Very, very worried.
Take him to the doctors as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Gary Thomas Stewart, what is your favourite decade for music?
Well, do you know, it's interesting. I was talking about on another radio show the other day, what would be my favourite all-time album, and it would be something probably by Bob Marley and the Wailers or Queen, or who knows. But I don't, and then again, Stones or Beatles? Rob?
Stones, I would have to say.
Me too. I don't know which my favourite decade is, because once you say that, then you're cutting off everything in the future. And I like music from all decades. I think once you say, and once you begin to say, well, it's not as good now as it used to be, then, you know, you really have become an old curmudgeonly what's it, haven't you? So my answer to that, Gary, would be every decade has favourite music for me in it.
Okay. Gavin Neeson, or Nason. How do you say that? N-A-S.
Nason.
Nason.
Nason. Gavin Nason. Not the most difficult of names.
Well, it is for me.
Yeah, but then you are living in Wales, aren't you? Gavin Nason's, yeah. Will Colchester United ever win a game? Now, it's interesting because I quite often, on my radio breakfast show, I quite often say that if Colchester would like, I am prepared to go down and help them out as a consultant manager.
Do you know much about football?
Not really, no. But that's not the point. The point is that they need to be enthused to win. And to be honest with you, I'm looking at the next job as a manager of the England team.
Just a smaller team then you're going after then?
Well, let me help Colchester, who actually haven't done too badly recently. Haven't won, but haven't done too badly. Because I honestly think I can get them to win. And then I can go on and offer, once I've got Colchester on my CV, I can then get the job, which is very well paid, for doing the England team. It's all, it's a question of getting them motivated to win. And you know, you get in the dressing room, you say, look, guys, first of all, you're getting no money at all if we lose, right? So if you forget the win bonus, you won't be getting a salary unless we win. And it's not like, you know, in football, there is no second place. You either win or you're a loser. And don't look at me smugly like that. You get out there, you're paid, and you get that ball in the back of their net.
Definitely their net, yes.
Now, if you can't concentrate on that, if you can't do that, then sod off and we'll get somebody that can. If, on the other hand, we win, I will make sure that you live a charmed life. So, guys, what do we want to do? Do we want to win or do we want to lose? You decide.
Wow.
It's motivated me to go out and play football.
Well, there we go then. Have we got time for more now?
Go on.
David Hazlitt, he's asking again. He asks this all the time. Winning numbers for lottery, please.
Yeah, send me £1,000 and I will send you what I consider to be the winning numbers for the lottery. By the way, there is no guarantee.
Sounds fair. Joe Gooch, do you keep...
You didn't want to do that name, did you? Because you didn't know how to pronounce that either.
Joe Gooch?
Yeah.
Have I said it right?
Yeah. Ish. Go on.
Do you keep in touch with Ash? It was Ash Wednesday after all.
It was Ash Wednesday, whatever that is. Yes, from time to time, Ash and I do have a little chat. Yeah.
Okay. And finally, Tracy Parker. Mm. As it now seems that all storms are being given a name, with the next letter being J, what should it be called?
Well, I think it's going to be, what it should be called is obviously James. Mm-hmm. But I think, it's going to be called Jade, I think.
Jade?
Yeah.
Is that that colour?
Well, no, it's a name, a girl's name, isn't it? Jade?
Jade?
Yeah.
I thought Jade was a shade of green.
Well, yeah, but I think it's also a girl's name, isn't it?
Jade.
Oh, for goodness sake, don't be so ridiculous. Ooh. Anyway, listen, I've got to, I have got to go.
Okay.
Because there's somebody at the door, right? Listen, can we carry this on next week?
You want me to sit here till next week?
No, you go and clear everything out, and I'll see you back here next week.
All right, then.
Okay, toodaloo.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/JamesWhaleRadioShow or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.